Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from People Mover. Help update the public transit service plan. Visit transitonthemove.com to take the latest public survey by April 26th.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Steve Cleary. Sailing has been around for a long part of human history, though many people have never had the opportunity to set out on the open water. Alaska has both plenty of water and plenty of wind, but it takes some skill and talent to put those together to get your boat moving forward safely. Sailing clubs in Alaska have a long history as well, dating back to the 1960s. Join me to learn more from both the Alaska Sailing Club and the Seward Yacht Club, as they share what makes their clubs unique and how you can get out on the water to learn what sailing in Alaska is all about. That's ahead on Outdoor Explorer.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Well, welcome to Outdoor Explorer. My name is Steve Cleary. I'm the guest host today on Outdoor Explorer, and it's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Wright, who's a past Commodore of the Alaska Sailing Club and a current instructor with the club. Jeff, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you, Steve. It is exciting to be here again.
Great. Yes. And you were here approximately 10 years ago. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But first of all, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and also how you got into sailing?
I'm going to do the short radio version because it is a long story. I first started sailing, I think, when I was 8 years old. I learned in the traditional Nebraska redneck way, where you get shoved out on a small boat in too much wind by your dad, and you come back absolutely hating it. I continued to hate it and resist sailing until I was about 12. My resistance was finally broken when my parents sent me to sailing camp at St. Mary's College of Maryland, which, despite the name, is actually a small public liberal arts school, right on the St. Mary's River, kind of where the Potomac River hits the Chesapeake Bay. Beautiful location. I went there under protest, fully expecting to just harden my hatred of sailing, but I came out the other side in love with it. It just took a couple of weeks with good instructors to turn me around, and I have been a huge fan ever since. I continued to go back to that camp for several years, then worked there as a counselor. While I was there as a counselor, I met another counselor, Kathy Weeks, who then became, somewhat later, Kathy Wright, and still teaches sailing with me, along with all three of my kids who come and sail and teach.
Jeez,
as
so
well.
It's a romance story as well.
It is a sailing romance story.
And then the club's been around, I was surprised to learn, since 1967.
Yes.
Did I have that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. 67 officially, that's when the nonprofit was formed, and unofficially, like 65-ish, the group formed and was kind of unofficially the Alaska Sailing Club.
And how long have you been involved with the Alaska Sailing Club?
I got there, I'm class of 2000.
Okay. So quite a while.
Yeah, quarter century mark now.
And there's a beautiful website that I've been perusing, and we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. But I gravitated towards the page that said learn, race, and relax. And so it seems like you have all three of those activities pegged out for the club.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the proper order, but we did think hard about, like, what are the three things that capture the spirit. The Sailing Club is actually a 501c3 nonprofit with an educational mission. So we both teach classes during the summer. We help onboard interested people into sailboat racing. We partner with other nonprofits to get people out there sailing. We've worked with the school district with Polaris K-12 to host several sailing intensives. So we are, we're all about teaching people. We do host a series of races during the summer. We also do a heck of a lot of relaxing. We are not like other sailing clubs. Most sailing clubs you go to, at least in the United States, have amenities like running water and flush toilets. We have neither of those things. But what we do have is an environment that I think a lot of our members describe as permanently on adult summer camp. You come there and, there is a beautiful lake and canoes and kayaks and sailboats and saunas and places to swim and a bonfire every night. And it's a lot of fun. Winds on Big Lake are unpredictable. Sometimes we have wind, sometimes we don't. But when we don't have wind, we hang out and we do that relaxing. What I didn't put is the sort of fourth thing that probably should be there is construction. Yeah. But that didn't seem like it would sell the experience. but anytime you have facilities meeting the water, there's always a lot of work to do. So we are continuously building and repairing docks, fixing, patching, rigging boats. And that's part of our learning, too. We both teach people to sail. We unofficially teach people basic carpentry skills. We teach people boat rigging, fiberglass repair, all of it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. But I think probably if the average person would think like, oh, where is the sailing club based? It wouldn't necessarily be on Big Lake or on a lake. Is there an advantage to that? Is it easier to learn when you're on a kind of confined space rather than being out in the open ocean?
There are advantages and disadvantages. In the advantage category is, although our water is pretty brutally cold right after the ice breaks, once that time of year, things warm up fairly quickly. So, by late June, when you capsize, it's no longer a shocking experience. And honestly, when you get to like mid-July, early August, the water's downright pleasant to swim in. You definitely don't have that in the ocean. Other advantages, it's safer, easier, calmer. You're always by the shore. The winds are fairly mild there. So it's a gentle place to learn. Disadvantages is the winds out there are kind of erratic. They're up and down. There's not a strong pattern there, but such as there is a pattern at all, we typically have winds, light winds up until about 11 o'clock in the morning. Very often it's dead through most of the afternoon, and then we get a very lovely evening fill that kind of comes up about 5:30 and then goes until 11 o'clock at night, which sounds late to be sailing. But since we live in Alaska, we can sit there and sail at 9 o'clock at night and watch a beautiful view of Denali from the lake while we're doing it. And that happens out there all the time.
Well, that sounds awesome. You kind of led me into my next question because I was wondering about the seasonality of it and sort of when you can sail and just what the seasonal activities are or the season in general.
Yep. So, season in general, the club officially opens, Memorial Day weekend. That's our first regatta. Usually a weekend or two before that, we have our spring work party. That's when we set docks out for the year and basically turn the lights on, check everything and make sure that we're ready to go. And then we have our first regatta. That's the icebreaker regatta on Memorial Day. I would say most years I've been there, we've been able to have it. We have had a couple where we haven't, because the ice isn't out yet. That might be the one race a year where you would be advised to be wearing at least a good wetsuit, if not a dry suit, not because it's uncomfortable from an air temperature standpoint, but when you fall in, it's really cold. Then during June, we roll our sailing classes. And our goal is to kind of teach people to sail early so they can be sailing with us all season. And then we have regattas and activities running in June, July, August, and into September. Our last regatta is the Northern Lights, and the Northern Lights we usually have third weekend of September. That's just a one day. Most of our regattas are full weekend things, but that one we have a regatta on Saturday, and then the very sad, it's not sad, it's still festive, but the close up fall work party on the Sunday after that regatta. And then things get pretty quiet there for the winter.
Sure.
We still have a couple people out working on a couple little projects, but largely we're closed after that.
I think there's a lot of us who think we know what a regatta is and we know that it involves sailing or boats, but walk us through one or two day or maybe both of those regattas and how it works for your club.
essential ingredients for a regatta is one or more sailboat races. Usually, we're depending on how long, you know, how many days the regatta is, we're targeting somewhere between, you know, 5 and 9 races. And then typically there is also, and this is just definitely a part of sailing culture, there's usually a great big party associated with all of them. And we do that part exceptionally well at the sailing club. Each regatta is its own race. And I mean, I can go as far into what a sailboat race is as you want. But since you asked the regatta question first, every regatta, you'll have a series of boats racing. They'll get points. The first place boat gets 1 point. The second place boat gets 2 points. Low points is better. And then at the end of the regatta, you take all those points for each boat, you add them up, and lowest points win.
Oh, well, and looking on your website, I saw some, I guess what I would consider boats on the smaller size, which makes sense for a lake.
Yep.
And is everybody racing a similar boat? Are those ones owned by the club or by individuals?
The answer to that question is both. Well, let's see. There are a couple of questions embedded there. To start with, we are primarily a small boat club. I mean, like at our heart, we're a dinghy club. We do have a harbor. And we do have some very engaged small keelboat owners who keep their boats moored in our harbor. And occasionally the keelboat guys will get it together to actually have their own start. So they'll have a little small keelboat race as part of the regattas. Most of the racing is small boats. There's a variety of sizes and types out there. The club actually has a really great teaching fleet. We have 6 Lido 14s that we purchased for a song from a club in California. One of our members, Matt Flickinger, did a whole lot of work, literally drove down there, trailered these boats up. They were training boats down there. They were pretty rough shape. One of the things we are really good at the sailing club, because we don't have the same easy source of boats as the rest of the world, is fixing old and broken things. And we have restored these boats to beautiful sailing shape. So that's kind of the heart of our teaching fleet. We also have, those are 2-person dinghies. We also have 3 lasers, which are a really popular single-person boat. A couple of members donate their lasers for our classes so we can have more people on there. We have for our youth classes, we have a small fleet of optimists. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple odds and ends boats. We have a really nice Catalina 16.5. We have an old restored Skipjack 15. Way back when, that was the primary class of the sailing club. And most of the boats had degraded into nothing, but we had a couple of good hulls left. And all the teenagers at the club went in and put, I don't know how many hours, it's got to be hundreds, into making this boat tip-top, super sailable again. So it's really fun. It's a nice boat. It's a good performing boat.
Well, that's awesome. And I guess I'll, thinking for, you know, I could put my own hat on and think of like, oh, what if you don't know anything about sailing? What if you want to give it a try? What would you recommend for somebody who's a beginner, who's never maybe sailed before, or if they have, they've just been a passenger?
That is my favorite softball question of the whole interview. You should come. Hey, Steve, you know what you should do? You should come take a sailing class. We teach 2 beginner classes every June. They are 3.5-day classes. So they're half day Thursday, all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And the days are long and wonderful. The classes officially start at 10 and then they go until 5. Reality is we rarely get done on time. Usually we break for dinner. And because we have lovely evening breezes, we go out and do like informal lake cruises on the club keelboat. Most of the people who take the class end up camping for the weekend. They either bring up RVs because we have RV spaces up there, or they bring up tents because we have a really nice tenting area. And we sail until 10 o'clock at night and then hang out by the campfire and then start over the next day. The class comes free with your first year of membership. Membership costs $250 for a single member, $500 for a family. With all the other things that have become more expensive in the world, even with all the inflation that's happened, we haven't touched our dues because one of our goals is to be as accessible to as many people as we can. Or I say we haven't touched our dues in 10 years or more. I think I probably quoted those same numbers the last time I was on the show. So that first year, that comes with a 3.5-day class. It also comes with unlimited use of the club boats all season, and then the ongoing support of a very enthusiastic membership whenever you go out there. Most of our members have learned to sail in context of classes at the club. So everybody is, you know, we don't have a built-in sailing culture up here like other places. We have to roll our own. And so we take these classes and people become sailing evangelists. And, you know, we take everybody that comes. And if you, anytime you come up, you'll run into more members. And if you forget something in the class, everybody's willing to jump in and help.
That sounds really neat. How many members are we talking about?
I can more than guess. We have 80 memberships right now. Mm-hmm. Most of our memberships are family memberships. So we probably have just like around 180 members total, mm-hmm. As you count like family members and, sure. and couples that are members of the club too.
If you're just joining us, this is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your guest host, Steve Cleary. And today I'm speaking to Jeff Wright, past Commodore and a current instructor with the Alaska Sailing Club. And how young could one be in order to participate? Obviously, you've got a lot of families, a lot of family fun out there. But are there 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 16-year-olds learning how to sail?
All of the above. We have, I would say, like the core of our demographic. We've actually kind of gotten younger as a club since I've been there. Our kind of core demographic is families with kids or teens. Our youth class is for ages 8 to 12. The other class is adult and teen, basically, you know, 13 to 99. Or if you were really 100 and wanted to do it, we'd take you. There's a ton to do. My kids essentially grew up there. And I think that those are the members that are easiest to hook because the kids come up there and they don't want to leave.
Right.
We have a really great culture of like, you know, everybody comes and kind of everybody's a parent. We have a fantastic safety record over there. I always warn people, you know, take the class, understand that anybody 12 and under on the club has to have a life jacket on at all times, anytime they're on the grounds. We have nearly a perfect safety record after 50 years when we're really interested in keeping that up. But yeah, the kids love it because they can go out. It's the one place where they can have freedom, right? You know, we teach them to sail and we have like 10-year-olds that, you know, they run, they get to the club and the first thing they do is they grab one of our little Optimists, they rig it and they're out on the water.
Mm. That sounds awesome.
And again, when it's not blowing, which does absolutely happen out there, the kids will go out and swim. They swim until they start to get a little blue around the edges. Then they go into the sauna. They warm back up. They go out and swim. This cycle can repeat itself for like,
you know, I imagine
30
can.
Or 40 times a day.
Right.
And they sleep really well after they've done that
all
day.
I bet. I remember, you reminding me, before we spoke about the, I want to get the name right, the Buccaneer 18 North American Championships that happened this summer. How'd that go? And just tell our listeners what that was all about.
So to start with, the Buccaneer 18 is a one design sailboat originally built by Chrysler Marine. It was and is an actively raced boat. It was originally Midwestern, but they're all over the country now. Great boat, main jib, two sails and a spinnaker. A spinnaker is the big kind of colorful balloony sail mm-hmm. that goes out front. We, some years ago, picked that as we decided we wanted to be able to do one design racing up here, which is, you know, where all boats are the same. Normally boats have ratings. So when you race them against each other, you do a little bit of math at the end and then you figure out who won.
Oh, because some boats would give you an advantage.
Yep. Some boats would give you an advantage. And one design racing, there's no rating. You know, if you beat somebody by a quarter boat length, you beat them by a quarter boat length. And it's really that makes it extra fun. I mean, I've raced in a lot of rated classes and that's great, but it's really nice to know when you beat somebody, it's like, it's clear and it's instant. So we started this. There were three of us, myself, another guy, Dave Johnson and Tim Gould. There's a long story on how we ended up with this boat. It involves me doing way too much analysis. Dave Johnson telling us he had a Buccaneer 18. It's like, we should use this boat. It's like, Dave, you're only saying that because you don't have to drag one up. He's like, no, it's a great boat. And I'd never heard of it because it wasn't a big East Coast boat at the time. And I'd sure. done a lot of sailing on the Chesapeake. And we did this long analysis project. You know, we wanted the boat that was fast and the Buck is super fast. We wanted a boat that was fun to sail. We wanted a boat where it was not a super wet boat. In other words, you weren't capsizing all the time because our lake is a little chilly and the Buck was that too. We wanted a boat where you could be a normal sized. There's a lot of race boats where you have to be kind of tiny to be competitive. They're very weight sensitive. We wanted a boat that was, you know, if you were a 200-pound adult, you could race in it and not lose just because you were a 200-pound adult. And the Buck, like we went through all these boats,
checked,
you know,
all the boxes. Them all,
and yeah. I got to the end. It's like, damn it, Dave was right. But yeah, so we got that. But I mean, honestly, realistically, I was thinking it's going to be three of us. It's going to be me, Dave, and Tim right. racing together. But eventually we dragged up another boat and another boat and another boat. We now have 16 of them up here.
Okay.
We have the second largest individual fleet in the United States. We like to proudly say, the furthest north One Design sailing fleet in the United States. And it's a fun boat, but much more importantly, it's a super fun group of people. So this has succeeded. I've certainly beyond my wildest dreams. I couldn't imagine, especially since every one of these boats has a hefty price tag for just shipping it from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. And so did you have guests from outside the state?
Yes.
Was bigger than just your club?
Yeah, we've routinely send members to BNAC, Buccaneer North American Championships, and it rotates around the country. Alaska recently established as its own region with the Buccaneer National Class. And last year we decided, and I should say some of our chief volunteers argued against us doing this because they were fully aware of just what a gigantic lift would be. And they were a little worried that, you know, we're this kind of crazy, you know, podunk, blue tarp and duct tape sailing club out in nowhere. And all these people are going to come and expect a, you know, high level of competition.
Well, sure. And the summer could be 40 degrees and raining.
That was all a risk. And in fact, leading up to the event, we watched the weather with sort of horror and despair because it, you know, the week before they were talking about atmospheric rivers and 50 degrees and pouring. Forecast ended up being wrong. We had a fantastic week, but yeah, we hosted it. We had the volunteer effort here was amazing. Just a couple of radio shout outs. Steve Ryan, one of our longtime members, who was actually himself, he was an Alaska Sailing Club kid back in the beginning, ended up sailing there as a kid, racing down in Seward for a long time, coming back to the club. He put in an inhuman amount of work getting all our boats ready. Cause unlike every BNAC everywhere else, normally people bring their boats. They just trailer their boats from point A to point B. We did this, and this is the first BNAC ever, as a round robin tournament. So we basically got
–
Hosted all the boats. Wow. Our members donated their boats. We tried as hard as we could to make every boat exactly the same. It was really easy for me to say yes. I was advocating we should do this because I wasn't Commodore anymore. That's Nancy Black now. And then we had another woman, Bree Busey, who's in charge of our racing program. I was like, you guys should do this. It's going to be great. And it was a huge amount of work. But what was amazing is talking to the people who came up there, who've been doing this, who travel all around the country for these races. They were saying this is, you know, one of the best BNACs they could ever remember. They're begging us to do it again. Everybody came and combined this, and like, you know, we had members taking these guys out all over the state and seeing
off.
All the sights and showing off. It was epically awesome. And the competition was fierce and friendly and wonderful. And we can actually say, and thank you, Team Canada. We had one team from Canada that as far as we can tell, we are the first
international
level sailing event ever held in the state of Alaska.
Well, you bring up a good point with travel, because then I think when I've admitted that I'm not a sailor at all, but if I do dream about it, I think about like people I've known who've gone to Greece or gone to the Mediterranean. And do you have, like, do your members aspire to go do travel somewhere and sail around the world?
Yeah, they don't just aspire, they do it. We have several people who've started here, who've sailed all over the world. I guess, and we have historically done group trips sometimes. I think most recently there was a group of people who all went down to the Grenadines and did a bareboat charter down there. Next year we are planning, BNAC is in Solomon's Island, Maryland, so we're planning a big member group trip. We're going to get a group house all there, and a whole bunch of Alaskans are going to come down and do that. So we both, you know, both people go around and sail on big boats all over the place. They travel for small boat races around the country too.
Wow, that's great. And is there, I know that you've got, great website and a Discord chat. Like, where do people get inspired? Like, are there blogs, YouTube, podcasts? Like, is it sailing all the time for folks, or do they just hear word of mouth about like, oh, I want to go to this BNAC there, or to go to a charter somewhere else?
Well, you know, it's funny. We're so far away from the rest of the world. Our sailing culture is a little disconnected. Obviously, you know, you can go online and there's, you know, look at, you know, Sailing Scuttlebutt or Sailing Anarchy and see all the great stories from all the events all around the planet. But up here, it's really, you know, it's kind of us and then the Seward Yacht Club too. I mean, these are the primary places people sail. But yeah, you can go look around and see. It's actually very fun. If you ever come to the sailing club, One thing that's part of sailing culture is once you become a sailor, when you visit other places, you look for their sailing club and you stop by. There's a tradition called a burgee exchange. Mm. A burgee is a little triangular flag. Every club has one. Mm. So every club has their club burgee. And when you go to other clubs, you can do a burgee exchange. You bring a burgee and you give them yours and you take theirs. And then if you go to most clubs, they'll have
a wall of them.
Or a lot of times they're hung up on lines around the ceiling. But we have burgees from all over Europe, from Africa, from Papua New Guinea. I mean, just because especially when people come here from somewhere else, sailors, they really like, oh my God, I do this every time I go someplace. I'm like, okay, where's the local sailing club? And then I want to go by and walk and just chat with them. And a lot of times you can talk yourself out for a sail someplace.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. Oh, it sounds like almost like a almost feels medieval in a way, like a coat of arms or something that you're exchanging.
It does have this sort of delightfully like old fashioned, archaic, but wonderful. I don't know. You feel like you become a sailor and you get into it and you feel like you're all of a sudden part of this sort of hidden worldwide community. And it really is amazing. You can go almost anywhere and they will welcome you with open arms. And you get extra star power if you say you're a sailor from Alaska.
Alaska, sure. Well, we were reminiscing before the show that you appeared on Outdoor Explorer approximately 10 years ago with Charles Wolforth. And so I wanted to ask you, between then and now, what's changed for the Alaska Sailing Club in those years? And what are you looking forward to next summer and beyond?
A lot, I think, has changed, and a lot for the better. Our club has grown. We are more members. If you just had come and taken a snapshot of the club, I should have actually brought these, or maybe I can put something up on the website so listeners can go look at it. But if you looked at our club 10 years ago, 10 years ago, we were building out the dock system that we have right now and the new shoreline. When the club came into existence in the 60s and early 70s, the members then, the club is right. It's located on top of what was once kind of a small drainage creek. Hmm. The shoreline was not, there wasn't a lot of it, and it kind of went to a creek mouth. People who were there before built this big gabion basket wall in the water and extended something you'd never be allowed to do now.
Right.
Extended the shoreline out probably 20, 30 feet, then built a series of docks that were affixed to those to that gabion basket wall. 10 years ago, that wall had failed, as they do. You put a bunch of metal wires under the water and eventually they're going to rust out. It all went at once. Every storm that would hit us, we were losing feet of shoreline per storm. We were in process of what was basically a 3-year mega project with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Alaska Fish and Game, a big shoreline restoration project, which was funded because a lot of people don't know this, but Big Lake is a really productive salmon spawning area.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And what we did is we returned our shoreline to more natural state, which makes it much better fish habitat and also much more storm proof. And I could do a whole, it was actually an awesome project to be involved in. It's not sailing related, but the club looked like a giant construction zone. We had a much smaller membership. Our classes were smaller. Nothing was as well organized. We were already in sort of build and upswing mode, but now if you go out there, it looks like a park. The grounds are beautiful. All the buildings have been lovingly restored. Every boat out there is lined up neat and clean and has a cover and is rigged properly. And that's all been, huge amounts of volunteer effort from so many people over the last 10 years, really over the last 20 years, 20, 25 years to get us where we are right now. The 80s were hard on it, like so many things in Alaska. And I think the low point was in the late 90s, we were down to 6 memberships.
Oh, wow.
Our 30-year lease ran out at the same time with Matsubara, almost lost the club.
The space, yeah.
Yep. Dave Johnson, who I mentioned before, who was one of the crazy people who thought of starting the Buck class, actually bought the property to save it. And we don't really advertise this, but we're technically, the way we manage this is we said, Dave told people, and this was like a handshake deal, hey, if you throw some money in to help me cover this, I'll let you build a cabin on it. And we all did this with no, we were one of the people who did this with no paperwork or anything else, you know, sure. just, you know, purely Alaska style. And after that, we went to the attorney and say, okay, we've done this. What do we do now? And he looked at us like, you are the craziest people. But we ended up converting the club into a condo association. So if you go out there, you'll see a bunch of little tiny, tiny plots of land with little tiny cabins. And then a major plot of land or the major area of the club, which is its own unit. We actually had it set up so only a 501c can ever, C3 can ever own it.
Okay.
Because we were really worried about what, you know, if we ever have a low moment in the club, we didn't like the property there has become so valuable.
I bet.
We didn't want it to be just another fancy house on the lake.
Sure.
Great. And, it's just like all this work, you know, legal work, infrastructure work, shoreline restoration, fixing boats, organizing classes. It's kind of hard to recognize, and we've come a long way really fast too.
Well, we sure appreciate you coming in here today and telling us about the Alaska Sailing Club. As I mentioned, we'll have a link to their wonderful website in the show notes. Jeff Wright, the past Commodore and current instructor for the Alaska Sailing Club, thanks again for being on Outdoor Explorer.
Absolutely. And Steve, one more thing just to tell all the listeners. If you've listened to this whole interview and you've gotten really excited about it and you want to take a class, our classes fill up remarkably fast. We don't even advertise anymore. All we do is turn them on the website. This usually happens February or March.
Wow.
So you just watch the website. But when we open the class, they're usually filled within a week.
That's amazing.
We usually have a long waiting list. Most of the time people aren't thinking about sailing in February or March, but watch our website. And if you want to do it, that's the time.
Well, thanks again for being here. And thanks for that tip. We appreciate it.
Sure thing. Glad to be here. It was fun.
So thanks again to Jeff Wright of the Alaska Sailing Club. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm Steve Cleary, your guest host. After the break, we'll continue speaking about sailing with Sam Steele of the Seward Yacht Club.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your guest host, Steve Cleary, and I'm very excited to welcome my next guest, Sam Steele, the Vice Commodore of the Seward Yacht Club. Sam, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and particularly how you got into sailing.
Well, I moved up to Alaska in 93 after graduating from University of Missouri. I had some friends that lived in Girdwood, and I thought, well, I wanted to move to Alaska because it was so much different than what Missouri had to offer as far as outdoors. I moved up and, got into climbing and sea kayaking and whatnot. Did that for many years and always had the desire to push out further and further out into Prince William Sound and Resurrection Bay because there's only so much time you allowed over a weekend and how far you can push out. So one thing led to another and it kind of led me into sailing.
Wow. And had you had any sailing experience growing up, or you learned everything you know about it up here?
No, everything I learned about was up here. My dad was a big boater, but, you know, that's like more like power boating and, you know, the lakes of Missouri. And he was more, you know, into fishing. Although he did race boats down there. But yeah, no, I just always had that kind of romantic, idea of what sailing was all about. And, you know, I remember one morning, as I tell people who ask me, you know, how to get into sailing, I was sea kayaking out with my son, Sydney, and we went out to Thumb Cove. And we were, that morning, it was raining, and we were underneath the tarp, and we were making, you know, breakfast and trying to stay warm and, you know, get some warm food in us and contemplate that day of, heading back into paddling back into Seward. And we're looking out at the boats at anchor, and I was like, oh, Sydney, wouldn't that be great to be out there on the boat? And he's like, yeah, Dad. He's like, you could, you know, be down there and cooking, and I could be down there, out there playing with my Legos, and be down below, be warm, you know? And I was like, you know, at that point, I knew. I was like, I want to, you know, when we get back, I'm going to start taking those steps necessary to, you know, contact Sailing Inc., when who was the local.
The company down at Seward that did instruction for you.
That's correct. Yeah, they're a boat broker and they do the American Sailing Association classes. So you can get certified and you take your basic keelboat classes and you can take it at various different levels of certifications to become more proficient.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so.
So in the first part of the show, we were talking to Jeff Wright, who I know you know, of the Alaska Sailing Club, and he was talking about, I believe I have it correct, the dinghies out at Big Lake, but your boats that you're sailing have keels on them. So it's a different class. It's a different type of sailing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, so the boats that we are using down there are considered, I guess, big boat series, and they usually are anywhere from, oh, typically around 28 to 45. Sometimes you get, maybe you get something on either side, but in general, they're, you know, in that size range. And yeah, all these boats are, have, you know, keels of various configurations and whatnot. And so it's a little bit of a different sailing, I guess, in a sense, but a lot of the basic principles are still very much the same.
Okay. And do a lot of people move from one to the other? Is it kind of like with planes, like you learn on a small one and you start building up?
Yeah, although you do see some people that kind of get back into the small boats after being in a big boat owner for a while. You kind of, there's a lot more expense and cost, and it's just easier when you can trailer your boat in and out and not have to leave it in the harbor. And
sure,
you know, and just it's, yeah, it's I'd probably, the small boats are a great way to learn as far as how to, you know, what the forces are that are acting on the boat. And a lot of people tend to kind of would like to go back and get back into that, especially when you get into racing and whatnot.
Yeah.
Big boats are typically more for cruising, I would say, although we do have a number of races during the summer season that the big boats have that, yeah, we enjoy.
Well, I'll ask you more about that in a little bit, but the Seward Yacht Club in general, how long has it been around? How many members? What are your general activities?
Yeah. So the club was formed in around 1975 by a group of sailors sitting around a bar. They decided they were sailing, and they decided, hey, we want to form this club. And they started the process of formally, I guess, incorporating the club and making it legitimate with a handbook and rules and guidelines of how the club would operate. You know, and then it's been around, yeah, since 1975. Memberships have grown and declined over time, and now it's kind of gone, it's ramping back up again. Currently, we have around, I'd say, 65 members, mostly families, some single members. So we have different membership levels, a family, single, racing, alumni, people that were longtime members that wanted to continue to be part of the club, you know, and are supporting in that way. Or they may have gone cruising around the world and they're no longer using the club per se, but, you know, they enjoy the benefits of the club membership.
Yeah. And do most of your members own their own boats? Are there any club boats, or is it all individual ownership?
No, it's all individual ownership.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's great. And it's all out of Resurrection Bay, but are a lot of your members living in other parts of the state, and then they come down for weekends, for weeks, or for longer, perhaps?
Right, yes. Most of, yeah, so everybody has their boat, and they keep it there in the harbor. Most of our members are from Anchorage. Mm-hmm. They travel back and forth from Seward. We do have members from Wasilla or Kenai as well, too, but by far the majority do come from Anchorage.
Great.
Yeah.
And you said there's a new company in Seward who is doing the instructions, doing the ASA certified instructions. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And how long would it take somebody to learn how to sail, to get that sort of certification?
Yeah. So for the past, oh, geez, it must have been like 30 years, Sailing Inc. was the go-to boat broker and American Sailing Association instructors for there. They just recently retired here last year, and a new young couple, Kate Pruitt and her husband Nate, they started up Resurrection Bay Sailing Charters originally, buying small sailboats and chartering them out. And then when they Sailing Inc. retired, they took over the ASA instructorship. And so you can you can learn how to sail really over pretty much 3 days or so of, okay, of classes. You kind of go down and classroom portion. There's an on-water portion. You go over the, you know, parts of the sailboat, and, you know, in the classroom, you take kind of some simple tests, and then you go out and put that to practice out on the water.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So Kate and Nate would have both the boat and the instruction. That's part of the whole package. Is that how it works?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you got to find somebody who owns a boat so that you can go help them sail, I suppose.
That's right.
That's the natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned some races. So I'll ask you about your club activities, but why don't you start out with races? There's some races down in Resurrection Bay?
That is correct. Yeah. So each year, in the summer. We'll start off with our summer series. We used to call it the white sails series, but now we call it the summer series. The white sails meaning you're only using white sails. You aren't using spinnakers.
I see.
But we started getting some people that are really interested into racing and using the more of the light wind sails of the spinnakers. And so we changed the name to the summer series. So that is three races that are spread out over the summer series. You know, usually around once per month, once in May, June, July. And then we also have a race called the Rum Doodle. It's an all-women's race. No men are allowed on the boats. The men conduct the race. They, you know, they marshal it and they set out the marks. And then these are like, you'll get four or five boats out there. There's nothing but women sailors out there, you know, some with some experience, some with none. And they go at it, and so it's a lot of fun out there. And then there's usually a big barbecue back at the clubhouse afterwards. And then at the end of the season, we have the Alaska Cup, which is a 2-day racing to determine the grand champion for the summer.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. And so I'm trying to picture it in those races, and maybe it's different for each one. But how many crew? How many members on each boat?
Usually, you're going to have around probably 4, 5, 6 members. It kind of depends on how many people come down and join and want to be, you know, kind of participating rail meet or so, you know, kind of people who have taken classes and kind of want to continue the process of learning, you know, putting those skills to work.
Right. And how long do those races last? Is it kind of an out and back from the harbor, or is there point to point?
Yeah, we used to just have, you know, a basic starting line where you'd go out to a far mark and you turn around and you come back. So those would be kind of like a mile and a half out. Of course, you know, that's not on a straight line because you're tacking back and forth. But you know, as far as the crow flies, it's a mile and a half, depending on where those marks are actually set. The last couple of years, we've actually started getting into more complicated race course setups and a little more challenging, more reaching, you know, more downwind types of legs. And yeah, so it incorporates more sail work. You know, you're raising spinnakers, dropping them. You know, sometimes you're going around the buoys in different, either on the port side or the starboard side. And yeah, so it's quite a bit more challenging.
Huh.
It's been very exciting.
Well, it would be exciting, I'm sure. I have a reminiscent memory similar to yours with the kayaking. My son, probably when he was 8 or 10, we tried to launch just from low point. It just like straight into a gale force wind, and we made it about 300 feet by paddling for a half hour and then turned around and came back. But anybody who's been down to Seward knows that there's wind, there's waves, there's weather. How do you, you know, I suppose that either you just get used to it or maybe you stay in the harbor, but what is your general recommendation when the weather starts getting rough?
Stay in the harbor.
Yeah.
You know, that's where part of being a smart sailor, you know, as they call seamanship, you know when you can, what your skill level is and when it's better just to, you know, hang tight and not push it. You know, it's just, one of those things that really comes from a lot of experience or even sometimes inexperience. You know, you get out there and you get yourselves in those situations and then you're like, oh, why didn't I stay back in the harbor where I was connected to the finger and I could have been just more happy just sitting on my boat and,
right.
You know, it's your floating cabin.
If you're just joining us, this is Outdoor Explorer and I'm your guest host, Steve Cleary. Today I'm speaking to Sam Steele, Vice Commodore of the Seward Yacht Club. So you mentioned those races. What other kinds of activities does the club do? And of course, the parties and sort of the barbecue after. But do you have any other formal club activities throughout the summer?
You know, during the summer, there's a lot of people just really want to get out and cruise. And the racing is primarily the forefront of what the club is doing. So, and really more of the activities happen in the off season.
Oh, okay.
During the winter, you know, people come back in, the boats are put to bed for the winter. And, you know, so keeping the club membership active and engaged, we'll have various types of activities such as diesel maintenance, you know, weather. We'll have somebody from the Park Service come and give a talk or things like that. And we'll, you know, do those at, you know, various venues around town, breweries and, you know, places like that where it's convenient, where we can kind of have a quiet kind of place where we can sit around and talk and, you know, listen to somebody give their speech or whatnot. So, yeah, we did one not too long ago about, you know, various anchoring spots around the Kenai Fjords area and Prince William Sound that a lot of the new members who are just getting into boating may not have had a chance to really kind of explore those areas and are kind of interested but don't really know, you know, where they would necessarily set that anchor in that cove or whatnot, and you kind of learn about different hazards and things to be aware of before you ever get in there. So
that sounds smart. Yeah. And so when we were talking to the Alaska Sailing Club about their sailing out in Big Lake, it was very, you know, day trips, obviously a couple hours, an hour. Mm-hmm. But you and your club have bigger boats, obviously with berths. How long do people go out and like what's a typical trip look like with those anchorings like you're talking about?
I think for a typical weekend cruise, you know, you're going out, heading down to Friday and coming back probably Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. So it can range from, I'd say on average, most people do 2 to 3 night types of trips. And from there, you can get, you know, out of Resurrection Bay, you can go down, you can head east over into Day Harbor, or if you want to go west, you go into Iolic Bay or push out to Northwestern Fjord. And so that's kind of pretty much what's realistic is what you can achieve in a 2 to 3 day weekend.
And if you had a week or more, have you done trips like that? And yeah, where would you head for those?
Well, you can go further on down, exploring the coastline down past Northwestern into Thunder Bay and Pagona and Anuka. Those are quite a bit further out. The more further out you get, the more remote and the more alone you are, the more self-sufficient you are. Conversely, you can go the other direction too, and you can make it over into Prince William Sound as well too.
Yeah. And have you sailed out of Whittier much? Is that something that you or your fellow members have done?
Some of the fellow members have. I have been in and out of Whittier. I usually did it more as far as, you know, going out to fish or shrimp or something like that, or sea kayak. The problem with Whittier is that the wind is either not blowing or it's blowing too hard, or with all the glaciers, it's coming from so many different directions. You can't get a consistent, you know, wind. And so it gets to be really fluky, and it makes for difficult sailing.
Sure.
Yeah. Great. A lot of great places to go in, you know, Gunko, Hideout, you know, in Prince William Sound, obviously. But as far as sailing, until you get out into the more the open parts of Prince William Sound, do you get the, you know, the consistent sailing?
Sure. You were mentioning you're from Missouri. I originally grew up in North Dakota, and I don't know anything about sailing. And so if you were advising a beginner who wanted to try out sailing just to see, you know, get their feet wet, I guess, so to speak, what would be your advice?
You know, obviously you can kind of just get books and start looking and reading and magazines and whatnot, but that's what I did, you know, and kind of start doing your research. You can go onto YouTube and there's, you know, follow the Yacht Club on Facebook. And then if you want to really get into it, you can start, you know, taking a class, or if you're not quite ready, you just want to dip your toe into it, you can come down and hop on one of the boats during the racing season. There's a small membership fee. You can pay, $50 for this past summer. We could participate in all three races. You come down and hop on a boat and, you know, do that. Or you can, if you just want to do it one time, there's a one-time fee. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a say, hey, this is something I'd like to explore further without, you know, putting out a large sum of money.
Sure.
And then if you want to take it and you want to kind of get certified, you know, like get your driver's license, you know, for boating, you can take an ASA class and start that process is what I, you know, did. And then, you know, once you finish the class and you're like, okay, how am I going to continue doing this? And you continue either racing, coming down and helping out on people's boats, racing and becoming more proficient, handling lines and understanding how sails work, and, you know, start walking the docks, looking at boats, you know, and, you know, who knows, next thing you know, you might be a boat owner, getting your survey done, splashing, and then you're like, okay, now we got to do it. This is us. We're, nobody else is here, but, you know, me and the fam or whoever you're sailing with. So, yeah.
Right. Oh, that sounds exciting. I know are a lot of your members or you yourself, you were mentioning fishing or shrimping or maybe kayaking. Like, are there other activities that sailing allows you to do when you're out there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we have a lot of members who like to fish off the back of the boats. And we were actually during the silver season where there was a race going on. And it was, the winds were light. And so we're like, well, you know, kind of their boats are really sailing. They're kind of just floating at that point. And so we're like, well, we can kind of put a line out. Sure enough, we pulled in like three or four silvers. And yeah, it's just like, so a lot of people do fish off their back of their boats, and some people put shrimp pots down. And of course, you know, like you'll see a lot of sailboats have kayaks sitting on the decks. And so that's where it's fun. You know, you get out there and you anchor up and you're able to launch the kayaks and get up close along the shoreline and really get into some exploring.
I hazard a guess that the answer is yes, but do a lot of your members, your friends who sail, have you gone on other adventures around the world? You know, like the, I don't know, I dream about sailing in warm water in Greece, even though I'm a, you know, not a sailor at all. But are there a lot of other adventures that your club members and maybe you yourself are taking advantage of?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We've had some members who have gone and on. They've taken their boats out from here and they've sailed down to Mexico. We got a couple of friends. One bought a boat down in California and took it down to Mexico. And I sailed with them down in the Sea of Cortez. And that was beautiful, wonderful sailing. And they go down and each winter, you know, kind of snowbird out. And then we have some people who've crossed over to French Polynesia, Tahiti, and they've got their boats over there, Guam, New Zealand. You know, a lot of members have gone and explored the world, various places.
And can you leave a boat somewhere in the way, like I've got friends who either leave a motorcycle or a car kind of in with friends around the lower 48, but is there a mechanism for leaving a boat somewhere and then flying back to it?
Sure.
6 months, a year later, that's okay.
Yeah, typically what they'll do is that when it comes time to come back to Alaska during the summer, they'll put their boat, you know, on the hard. So they'll, you know, big lift will come and put the boat up on stands, and that's where it kind of lives during the off season for the most part. Yeah.
And so I imagine that there's got to be some motoring when you're leaving the harbor or coming into the harbor, but on your typical sailing adventure, how much is it sail and how much is it motor?
That's a good question. I mean, sometimes it can be, you know, half and half. Sometimes you just, you know, the wind just simply isn't blowing. You get down there and it is what it is, you know, it's just, but we've got all our food and our provisions and we're ready to go out and we're going to go out and still have a good time. So that's why they usually have these little auxiliary diesels, on board, and you can motor out, you know, then it's more like a straight line, you know, type of passage instead of having to tack back and forth with your sails. And boats can make around 6 to 8 knots per hour. So, you know, you can easily in a day, you know, get out, you know, 30, 40 miles outside of Seward and find a place to, you know, anchor up and go explore and enjoy the nature.
I always, whenever anybody says the word tack, I always nod my head knowingly as though I know what that means. But maybe you could explain that to me and the listeners.
Sure. Well, so a sailboat that operates with sails, and the sails are like a plane, a wing on a plane, and that creates lift as the curve of the sail, the wind travels across the curve of the sail, you have pressure differentials. So as wind speeds up, it has a lower pressure than the inside pressure. And so that kind of pulls the boat forward and the keel and counteracts that tendency to slip sideways. So that's why you have a keel on the bottom of a boat. But you can't go directly into the wind. So you're always having to go off to the side. And it's usually around, say, 30 degrees or so. And as you get, you know, to a certain point, then it's okay. Well, we're getting close to land or the wind is starting to die. We need to tack over. And so at that point, you're releasing the sails on one side and you're turning the wheel and you're going into a turn. And so you pull the sails to the other side and then winch them in, make them good and tight. And then the wind starts flowing efficiently over the sails and you go off on a different tack. So it's kind of going into a turn each time.
Right.
Yeah.
And so as you're sailing into the wind like that, does it take, would you say, like twice as long as if you were turning around to come back with the wind, or is it not that easy to calculate?
No, I think you're still pretty much going the same speed for the most part. The difference is, though, when you are going into the wind, you got the wind in your face, whereas you're going downwind, you got the wind at your back, and the wind is kind of going along with you. And then the wind is more pushing you. The sail is acting more like a big dam, you know, that's the wind is hitting. Instead of creating that lift, you're getting more of a push effect at that point. And when you're going downwind, it's kind of like all of a sudden it seems to get really quiet and you're kind of like, what's going on? Oh, but the wind's not in my face. It's sort of like riding a bike. You know, you're riding a bike and you get the wind in your face and you turn around and all of a sudden the wind is behind you. Now you don't have that wind in your face. So it's that kind of that difference of that feeling.
And how many people do you need on the boat to be able to sail? I'm sure there's a minimum, or maybe some people sail on their own, but what's sort of a typical size of the crew and passengers?
Well, I think a lot of people just sail as couples, you know, and then Certainly there are solo sailors. I've done it, you know, I first started sailing. There's times when I was the only one that was, I went out a few times by myself, and that was kind of a nerve wracking experience, you know, and, you know, as a dad with three boys, they were young, and it was really just me running the boat and three boys. So, but I think typically, you know, you get couples, you know, a couple, maybe they want to bring some friends and they'll bring another couple. These boats will typically have a berth in the front and a berth in the back, maybe two berths in the back. So, you know, you just don't see really more than, I'd say, six at the most, because, you know, your bigger boats would have like a two-person berth in the front and two-person berths in the back. You know, of course, you could really pack them in and let them sleep on the settees, which are, you know, the couches inside. And yeah, but, you know, at that point, usually it kind of starts, you're bumping into one another and you don't really have room to maneuver. You know, it just gets too tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have your sons caught the bug? Have they grown up as sailors and now they like to do it on their own?
Well, they just have graduated from college and they're kind of finding their way. You know, they're spread out all over the lower 48 and they'd love to come back and sail. They were up this summer and we went sailing with my buddy Chris Reynolds out on his boat. And we also got to do some fishing while we're out there. So they love it. They haven't had the opportunity yet though right now. They're kind of landlocked, so to
sure.
speak.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I appreciate talking to you today, and we're going to have a link to your website at the Seward Yacht Club, and we'll also put in a link to the Resurrection Bay sailing charters.
That'd be great.
In case people are interested in that ASA class and sort of learning more. Are there any other aspects of the Seward Yacht Club you're hoping to cover today?
Just if people are interested in, you know, sailing, learning to sail, dipping their toes into it, just reach out, you know, come to the club. We have sailor socials once a month, I mean, and sometimes we'll have a speaker or we'll just get together and have a local, you know, watering hole and just sit around and chat it up and see what everybody's been up to. So, you know, it's just a matter of taking that step and participating and, you know, putting yourself out there. And then next thing you know, you're starting to make relationships and opportunities arise and, you know, it's up to you to take it from there, but there's a lot of avenues to, you know, learn how to sail.
Well, Sam Steele, Vice Commodore of the Seward Yacht Club, thanks for being a guest today on Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this week's show. I want to thank my guests, Jeff Wright of the Alaska Sailing Club and Sam Steele of the Seward Yacht Club. I've been your guest host, Steve Cleary. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.